Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My primary concern is the stability of our financial system, the orderliness of the markets, and that's where our focus is.
Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson on ABC This Week with George Stephanopoulos yesterday. And we begin this week with the world trying to understand the fire sale bailout of Bear Stearns and the extent of the crisis it represents. There was a kind of double shock over the weekend. First, the Fed announced a bailout of Bear Stearns, the big investment house. Then it announced the sale of the company to J.P. Morgan for $2 a share to get it done quickly. Bear Stearns was selling for more than $150 a share just last year, more than, I think, $60 a share just recently. Treasury Secretary Paulson was on TV yesterday saying words that you hardly expect to hear in the 21st century, that the stability of the financial system is his primary concern. Stark words. There is fear that the fallout from the subprime meltdown could spread to other major investment firms. The national and global economies will feel the effects. New York City and vicinity certainly will too. We'll talk nationally, globally, locally, and ask, how do we understand what is taking place? With me now is Rex Nutting. He's the Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief for Dow Jones Market Watch, the financial news website. And Rex, thanks for coming on WNYC with us on a busy morning. Hello.
It's good to be here.
And I want to open up the phones right away for listeners to share your own impressions, people who work on the street or maybe did until recently, and anyone with questions about what to make of this current situation and these dramatic events of this weekend. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Our phones are open. So is our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer's show. Rex, this double shock, first the announcement of a bailout of Bear Stearns, then the equally shocking announcement of the sale of the company to J.P. Morgan for $2 a share. Did the bailout mean one thing and the share price mean another?
Well, I think it's all of a piece. You know, what happened to Bear Stearns was a fast erosion of trust by everybody it did business with over the last few years. None of these people believed that Bear Stearns would be able to make good on its word. And once that happens to a financial institution, they're doomed, really, because no bank or no securities firm has enough capital sitting around in the vaults to make all the payments. So the trust level was gone, and the Fed stepped in to make sure that that if Bear Stearns was to collapse, then it wouldn't have a ripple effect. You know, all of these firms are locked together with all kinds of different contracts and payments back and forth. There's about $3 trillion worth of payments that have to be rolled over every night in the global financial system. And that means that when one big player fails or fails to make payments, it affects everybody. And then everybody gets nervous. And that's the domino effect that the Federal Reserve was really trying to avoid. Now, the sale price of Bear Stearns for $2 essentially says it failed. It's worth almost nothing. And I think that that's a strong message to those people who believe that the Fed is willing to bail out everybody, that the bailouts come at a big price. The shareholders and the management of Bear Stearns lost everything.
But did the $2 sale price mean the bailout fell short of its intended effects?
Well, I think I think J.P. Morgan ran a very tough bargain. They knew that the Fed wanted a deal done over the weekend. J.P. Morgan didn't particularly want to buy Bear Stearns, certainly at $60 a share. And so I think that J.P. Morgan they were tough negotiators, and they paid as little as they could for it as they could. And the other thing is that the Federal Reserve is taking on about $30 billion worth of the very worst of the debt that Bear Stearns had, and is going to guarantee that. Now, that doesn't mean the Fed will lose $30 billion, but it does mean that J.P. Morgan doesn't have to take that on
as risk, just in case
Right.
The investment doesn't work out. As far as Bear Stearns, by the way, couldn't happen to a nicer company from everything I gather. They were known as a bad corporate citizen. They refused to take part in the federal bailout in 1998 that most of the rest of Wall Street took part in. Why not just let Bear Stearns go down?
Well, I think that Bear Stearns does have a reputation as being an outsider on Wall Street. They didn't want to play inside the club. And I think if other people on Wall Street had their way, Bear Stearns would have failed. But, you know, you look at the $236 million that J.P. Morgan paid for them. You know, that pays for their office building, which is worth probably more than that in downtown Manhattan. Essentially,
there's a big new gleaming Bear Stearns building here, right?
Right.
And isn't that itself valued at about $1 billion?
I would think so. So essentially, J.P. Morgan got all these assets, and there's plenty of other assets on their bank, on their books, that are going to be very, very good assets over the long run. It's just that in this current climate of fear, that even good assets are shunned by investors, and people want cash or gold, and that's all they want. They don't want to have a security that's paying off 6 or 7% every year in an almost risk-free environment. That's too risky at this point.
The financial press is characterizing what happened at Bear Stearns as a run on a bank. Again, stark language, reminiscent of the 1930s, things that you and I today read in history books. Treasury Secretary Paulson goes on TV. We played the clip to reassure us of the stability of the financial system. That he has to reassure us implies it's in question. How much of this is hyperbole, and how much is something fundamental at risk beyond Bear Stearns?
Well, I do think that there's a fundamental risk to the global system. We've allowed things to get to the point where a company like Bear Stearns, that isn't really regulated by the federal government, if it were to collapse, it would bring down a lot of other banks, a lot of other financial securities. And it would have, I think, a devastating effect on the global economy, at least for a short period of time, until, trust could be restored. But who knows how long that could be. You know, we have situations like this happen in the past, and some of them have ended very, very badly. The Great Depression, for instance. Another example might be what's happened in Japan over the last decade or so, with very slow growth as the banks are very reluctant to get back into the business. And I think that that's what the Fed and the Treasury Department are really trying to avoid, this sort of systemic crisis where everybody comes down. And that's just not acceptable.
My guest on WNYC is Rex Nutting, Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief for Dow Jones Market Watch, the financial news website at marketwatch.com, as we try to take stock of what the Bear Stearns bailout and fire sale means and the aftershocks in the global markets. Wall Street is down from the early numbers I'm seeing, but not horribly. Our phone number, 212-433-WNYC. And John in Paramus, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
I had seen an article on the Internet on Friday when the Bear Stearns share price dropped in half, basically, that on Thursday there was unusual put option activity, which is basically the type of option that you buy if you want to see the price go down on the stock. And it was like 55,000 contracts, which each contract represents 100 shares. And they bought it for like 18 cents. And then on Friday it was worth like $5, $6. Today it's worth probably like $40. So it seems like people know what's going on, and I think heads should roll for some of this Bear Stearns price problem.
John, thank you. And was there any deception possibly involved here, Rex? I read in one article that corporate leaders of Bear Stearns were assuring everybody that everything was okay, because there had been rumors on the street early last week, I think,
right,
of some kind of serious, serious problem. And they said there's nothing to those rumors. Well, obviously, there turned out to be something to them. If they knew at the time, is that criminal misleading of the public about a publicly traded company's financial situation?
Well, if they did mislead, it would be a crime. It would be a violation of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. The problem for financial companies is that it's all about trust, and you would expect a leader of a bank to say everything is fine, just like we expect Treasury Secretary Paulson and Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke to say everything is fine. If they don't say everything is fine, then we know things are really, really bad. So for a bank CEO, they're in a tough situation because even acknowledging that the bank may be under some pressure could lead to people like this gentleman said, putting pressure on the stock, other customers demanding payment instantly. So in other words, the rumors could be self-fulfilling. So it's not really clear that he lied when he said everything was fine. He may have been saying at that point in time they had enough liquidity to survive, but over the next couple of days, because of the rumors, their position became untenable. So we'll have to look back and see what the condition really was of their books before you can really say he lied to investors. But certainly we can expect other investors now to be very skeptical when CEOs come on and say, don't worry, everything is fine. We're seeing that today. A lot of the different banks on Wall Street are coming out saying, we're okay, but the investors are punishing their stocks today. Lehman Brothers is down more than 20%, for instance, and a lot of people believe that Lehman Brothers, Fannie and Freddie, Citigroup, some of these banks may be in worse condition than we know, and I think the sharks are out right now, and so it's really hard to say what's going to happen over the next couple of days. It could get very bloody.
Those ones more invested in mortgage-backed securities would be the ones to be taking these hits today?
Right, and those who have highly leveraged themselves. So in other words, the average bank might have $1 of assets for every $10 of loans. There are some of these banks that were leveraged 30-1. Bear Stearns, for instance, was very highly leveraged. Carlyle Capital, a hedge fund that recently looks like it's not going to be able to survive, it was leveraged 30-1. So the more leverage you have, the bigger the losses are on the way down. And I think people are looking at balance sheets issues like that, and also looking at how diversified their income is.
What does leveraged mean in that respect?
It essentially means how much you've borrowed. You could borrow $10 and have $1 of collateral. That would be leveraged 10-1. So that for every dollar you had in your bank vaults, you'd lend out $10, and
gosh,
you can make
so
a lot of money that way.
Yeah, it's almost like the subprime mortgages themselves. You hardly have to put anything down, and so it doesn't reflect maybe the buyer's true financial situation. You're saying big investment firms were doing the same thing.
That's exactly right, and the credit agencies were really allowing this to happen by valuing all of the collateral that they were putting up as being very, very valuable when in fact it wasn't. And so part of the problem is that the collateral these people have put up has collapsed in value. Instead of 30-1 leverage, you're really now at 70-1 leverage. And the people on the other side of that trade want their money back right now.
Bob in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Bob.
Oh, thank you. Hello. Rex?
Yeah.
You mentioned Lehman Brothers down 20%.
Yeah.
I also heard this morning Merrill Lynch is down 10%. Some others are down 7%. Now, what happens to the funds that's under management of those companies? Supposing they one of those companies did go bankrupt. In other words, if you're invested, let's say, in Merrill Lynch, not in the stock, but in some mutual fund managed by Merrill Lynch, could be like, let's say, government bonds mostly, what happens to those assets?
Well, I think that's one of the things that's a big worry to the regulators. So far, you know, nobody has lost money in that kind of situation. Another bank would take over management of those funds, and they're kept separate from the bank's own funds. So in a best-case scenario, another institution would step in, take control, take management of those funds, and people who invested through those accounts would probably be fine. The problem is if there's a big, serious systemic problem, where everybody goes down at once, there's nobody to step in and guarantee those funds. So that could ripple down to the individual investor level, and that's obviously something they really want to avoid. But people who have cash invested with Bear Stearns have now had their accounts guaranteed with J.P. Morgan. So those people, you know, they're not suffering the way that the shareholders are.
So that's a distinction that it's worth making. The shareholders in the company, people who buy Bear Stearns stock, that's not the same as the many, many more people around the country, or maybe it's many more, who are just, you know, regular mom-and-pop investors who might have their brokerage accounts with Bear Stearns.
Right, right.
Right, all those mutual funds and stuff don't go down, even if Bear Stearns were to fail and there was the buyout, or the bailout.
In theory, that's exactly right.
In practice?
Well, Bear Stearns doesn't really have a lot of mutual fund business. They're mostly on the institutional side and,
uh-huh.
and they're running more hedge funds, and so it's bigger than the mutual funds. But those accounts have been guaranteed by J.P. Morgan now. So people who've invested with Bear Stearns shouldn't lose just because Bear Stearns went under. They may lose because they invested in very, very foolish things.
Right, right, that they tended to invest in. Susan and Edison, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Yes, hi, thank you. I admittedly don't understand much about this, so I have a very elementary question. Does the term bailout mean that, you know, millions or billions of our taxpayer dollars were just given to this company?
Well, so far, no taxpayer money has been given to Bear Stearns. The bailout is really coming from J.P. Morgan. The Federal Reserve is guaranteeing $30 billion worth of the very bad assets, and at the end of the day, some of that could come out of taxpayer money. But in the past, there's been different bailouts. For instance, the savings and loan crisis in the late 80s and early 90s, the government stepped in and bought a lot of really shady property. But at the end of the day, the government actually made money on this bailout by selling the assets off in a slow process so that the prices wouldn't plunge instantly. And even in the Depression, the government bought mortgages and actually made a profit on this. So I think that the risk to the taxpayer is probably small at this point.
Are the corporate leaders of Bear Stearns going to lose their shirts here? Because, you know, people are very skeptical that this pain is felt at the top. We've seen it in so many different kinds of companies where the CEO and some of the other executives get to maintain golden parachutes and big bonuses, even as shareholders and the public at large gets hurt by their bad decisions and bad management. Is that going to happen
right
here?
Well, I don't know what the details of the buyout of Bear Stearns are. We know that the executives who owned lots of Bear Stearns stock lost pretty much everything they had. One of the big executives had over $1 billion worth of stock priced at last year's prices, and today they're worth about $13 million. Now, $13 million, he's not a pauper, but he's not a billionaire. And, of course, they're going to lose their jobs in most cases. And so I think that they are punished to some extent, but when the rich get punished, it sounds a lot like going on vacation to me.
Joe, or is it Jody, in Washington Heights? You're on WNYC.
Hello, is that me?
Yes, that's you.
It's actually Josh in Washington.
Josh, I'm sorry. Hi.
Hi. I'm one of those mom-and-pop investors, and I have both a cautionary tale and a question to your guest. I am having trouble getting my money out of Wachovia at this point, money that supposedly was safe in a money fund, which I needed in order to purchase my apartment. And I almost lost my apartment last week because I couldn't make a payment, given that the money that I was told had been put into a money fund and was instantly liquid got put into these esoteric instruments called 7-day auction notes through Eaton Vance. Is your guest familiar with it? And I'm still not only faced with not even being able to get my money, but the only way I could get any of it was that they forced me to borrow on a margin account to which I'm paying interest for some of my own money so that I could make my payment, court-ordered payment to get my apartment, or I was going to lose my apartment. And this is through Wachovia.
Through Wachovia. So I don't want to, I don't want to create any false fears here. My guess is that this individual has some kind of particular circumstance where maybe there was a misunderstanding about what kind of investment he was making with Wachovia. But does this sound like anything you're familiar with?
Yeah, these auction notes have been very popular because they paid a very good rate, and people were getting a little bit more interest than they would on something that was a little safer. And people were told that this was as safe as cash, but in the last couple of weeks, these auctions have failed. In other words, nobody wants to buy the note.
So you mean these bank? We see these ads in the newspaper all the time for various banks that say, high interest yield money market fund, fully liquid, 4%, which is high interest in today's economy.
Yeah.
That is not really a money market fund in the sense that we know it, which is in effect the same as a savings account. Money can just go in and out.
For some people, that's exactly right. I'm not going to say that all money market funds have this same problem. Probably most of them are very liquid. They're invested in treasuries and things like that. But some people were trying to get some extra yield, and they invested in some things that had been very, very good, and now they're not. And people just can't get their money out of them. And I would suggest that the issue here is really almost a political one, because the way the rules were written, there's no way to force people to give you your money back. And I think that the politicians are going to have to get involved here to make sure that people are not punished because they invested in something that it seemed good at the time, and that they didn't really necessarily know they were investing in something that wasn't liquid. They were told it was liquid. So I think that it's going to be a political solution to this
another
problem.
Question of yep. transparency in sales.
That's right.
Wow, I hadn't been aware of this issue. This is a really interesting wrinkle. My guest for another few minutes, Rex Nutting, Washington Bureau Chief of Dow Jones Market Watch, the financial news website. Paul Krugman today, in his New York Times column, says the Bush-Greenspan philosophy that the markets are always right and regulation is always bad led the government to miss the warning signs of the subprime crisis. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I think so. I think that over the last 25 years, and it goes beyond the Bush and Greenspan eras. It started way before they became involved. But I think that they supported that policy enthusiastically, that financial markets could innovate and create new products, and the government didn't really need to get involved, because for every one of these investments, there's a buyer and there's a seller, and they're supposed to look out for their own interests. And I think where they missed the boat was that there's a lack of information on many of these instruments. For instance, this gentleman who talked about the money market he bought, he didn't have the information he needed to make a good choice, and so therefore the regulation that he thought was there isn't. There is no regulation of these instruments, and I think that's the case for a lot of these securities. There really isn't the kind of government backstop. And because of the way the market works, there's a lot of incentive for people to sell you things, even though in the long run it may even hurt their own firm. But the person who sold it got a big fee for it, and that's where a lot of these companies were making their money for a long time, is in the fees, the transaction fees.
The lack of transparency that you're describing is
absolutely right.
And outrageous.
The incentives were geared towards short-term gains instead of looking at the long-term.
And a lot of people probably thought that these are the kinds of things that were rooted out by Sarbanes-Oxley and the rest of the scrutiny that came to bear after the Enron and WorldCom and Tyco era failures of a few years ago. Maybe that, you know, this is the good side of Elliot Spitzer that people might remember, that when he was going after things like that, for lack of transparency on Wall Street. But The people probably were under the impression that was taken care of.
Well, I think that's right. And even, for instance, looking at the mortgage market, I know that Spitzer and his successor, Cuomo, were trying to go after some of these mortgage companies, and the federal government basically came in and said, no, you can't, because that's a federal responsibility, even though the federal government wasn't regulating them. So I think there was a clear failure on the regulator side.
George in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Good morning, Brian. A couple of things. First of all, don't these people who complain, if you've had a few on the telephone already, don't they have the responsibility to read what it is they're investing in and have a sense of understanding what it is? They should have talked with their broker, and maybe the broker should have explained it better, but they have some responsibility too. I would say that's something that's perhaps overlooked. Everybody's not innocent. They want to get a higher yield, and they don't seem to understand that there's a difference between yield and risk. So I would say that's something that needs to be discussed, maybe in a future episode of this. What I was going to comment on was the impact on New York, looking at this more selfishly. In a sense, what Bear Stearns has with its brand new headquarters is probably the most modern trading floor in New York, and maybe one of the most modern trading floors in the whole world. There's a tremendous shortage of such space in New York, so it is immensely valuable to have gotten control of that. But the interesting aspect of it is that it may now provide a disincentive to Chase, whose headquarters are just across the street in the old manufacturer's Hanover building, originally Union Carbide building, for them to just have the operation stay in Midtown and not go to the World Trade Center site.
Hmm.
Secondly, as was stated earlier, there's a problem with the incentives that were given to people who were working on the street. The short-term pay and bonuses and the rest were based on performance during that quarter or during that year without a full understanding of the perhaps accounting for additional risk and the rest that went along with all of it. So that many of the people who made their fortunes in this are long gone and out of the picture. Yes, it's true the top management are major shareholders in Bear Stearns, and they're going to be very, very heavy losers. And the employees of the company own a third of it, so they're going to be losers as well. But it's not quite the same thing. And there's talk about changing this in terms of future incentives for people working on the street.
And I have to leave it there because we're quick running out of time, and we're going to speak to a New York State Senate Minority Leader about this and the transition to David Paterson today in just a minute. Malcolm Smith, Rex Nutting, answer George's series of comments there with what you think is most pertinent.
Well, I think he's right about the responsibility that people have for knowing what they're investing in, and it extends not only from the individual investors but all the way up the food chain to people at these big sophisticated banks who also didn't understand what they were buying, and that's the root of this problem, I think.
And in terms of what they were buying, real quick, I was talking to a retired bank vice president over the weekend, a guy in his 80s, who says in his day, you knew what you were investing in. He remembers being skeptical about the early presentations on derivatives that he saw just before he retired, thinking these are investments not based on any underlying assets. Have we gone crazy with synthetic investments, which are now showing themselves to be flimsy as air?
Well, I think that the evidence of the last year is pretty conclusive that some of these derivatives, maybe not all, but a lot of them were written just based on a hope that something good would happen, and there's nothing really behind them at all.
All right. Well, obviously, we're going to follow this very closely this week and beyond. Here on the show, we'll get to some more personal advice as to what people like Josh in Washington Heights can do if they're finding themselves innocent victims of this. Rex Nutting, Washington Bureau Chief for Dow Jones Market Watch, thank you very much for coming on with us.
You're welcome.
New York State Senate Minority Leader Malcolm Smith next. This has ramifications in New York State because as David Paterson assumes the governorship today, the budget is fast changing under him and the new fiscal year starts on April 1st. So what does this mean for New Yorkers? Stay with us.